Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time for the baseball podcast with Bally Senior MLB writer David Brown. David, how are you?
Hi, Andy. I'm doing better than the Cardinals or the A's. Although the A's are winning games, but in another way. I mean, A's fans.
Yeah. Yeah, we start with that. So, a lot happened with the A's this week. They 2 days ago, or was it yesterday? Time has lost all meaning. The fans had a reverse boycott. And 27,000 of them paid to go see the A's play. The A's beat the Rays. They were like, holy crap, there's fans here.
Yeah.
And then I believe last night, yeah, it was two nights ago, because I believe last night they had about 6,000 fans. Went back to normal. Some of the fans who did go were pissed that the A's made a big deal out of donating the $810,000 of gate revenue to charities, but insisting that they, you know, basically taking credit for it when the fans are like, we donated that. We generated that money for charity. You didn't do shit.
I hadn't heard that subplot.
Yes. So that happened. But then today, this morning, the Nevada legislature approved funding for some public funding for a $1.5 billion stadium, retractable roof stadium, in Las Vegas, and the governor has since signed it. So now all that's left is a ownership vote, where they need 20 of the 30 MLB owners to approve the move, and then the A's think they'll have their stadium built in by 2027. And their plan right now is to move to Oakland, move to Vegas and play in their AAA ballpark starting in 2025. Think in reality they're going to have to go there next year?
I mean, You would think so. It's just so, you know, their attitude. I don't know why anybody would watch them on TV. I don't know. I know, you know, I'd be sad that they were going. I'd be beside myself if I was an Ace fan. But I certainly, I mean, part of the issue with the reverse boycott the other day was that the fans have been so poorly treated by ownership that they've stopped going. I mean, the team is not only bad, but they're hostile toward their own fans and making the team better. And it's impossible for me to think that, you know, unless there's, you know, some way to keep the team in Oakland, like selling them and the A's reneging on whatever commitments to Las Vegas, how are they going to get more than 1,000 people to go to any game next year? Any one game?
Yeah, so far this year they've played 34 home games. Their total attendance is 310,000, so it's less than 10,000 a game. They've had two games of more than 20,000 fans. That was opening day,
right,
and then the reverse boycott day. That's it. They've had 11 games of over 10,000. And 11 games under 5,000. Their high attendance was the reverse boycott, 27,759. Their low, and if you went to this game and came home without a foul ball, you weren't trying. It must have been because it was tax day. Everybody was doing their taxes, so they couldn't get to the ballpark. 2,064 fans against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Hmm. And I would think that would be about the size crowd they could probably expect most of the time. Maybe. From here on out. Because, I mean, if your team has, you know, you're upset at them anyway, the way they're, you know, they're not trying to put a winning team on the field. They're, you know, basically everything they've done has been to try to drive fans away so they could justify leaving.
Right.
And still some of the fans go because it's Major League Baseball. And after a while, but even now, I think most of them are like, fuck that. Why would I spend a penny now there? So this idea that they're going to play out the last 2 years of their lease and then move to Vegas is ridiculous. They've just got to go.
It's so absurd, though, that I could see them trying to stay and moving in the middle of the season. I mean, you know, it's I could see that happening.
Yeah. Like, they give it a go next to April, and then they're like, no, this isn't going to work. And the poor AAA team is like, where the hell are we supposed to play? We'll just play doubleheaders.
How about Oakland?
Yeah, they should. They should just become and they end up with bigger crowds. We should have done this decades ago. Do you know what the relocation fee is in Major League Baseball? Now, the A's will not have to pay it. Rob Manfred has already said that they will not make them pay the relocation fee. But I didn't know there was one until I read this.
No, I didn't either.
$1 billion.
$1 billion. Okay.
$1 billion if you're going to relocate.
So that's why no one's ever paid that.
Yeah. Well, the last time a team relocated, Major League Baseball owned them. Exactly. So they didn't have to pay it when they moved the Expos to Washington. And then that was that whole weird, they traded the Marlins for the Expos, and then the Expos became the Nationals. And it's like, who moved? It's what a mess. That's how John Henry ended up owning the Red Sox. Was all part of that mess. The new ballpark in Vegas is going to be built on a 9-acre lot right next to the Tropicana. Does Mo Green still run the Tropicana? Yeah. You can't talk that way to a man like Mo Green.
Like that.
Oh, I guess it's the Tropicana, the non-fictional version of the Tropicana.
Yeah.
9 acres isn't that big for a baseball stadium.
They had a bigger offer from Oakland.
A 55-acre
thing.
Well, so that was part of the deal, right? So Oakland actually had a relatively – they had a plan where they would basically just tear down the Coliseum and build them a real stadium there.
Yeah.
And John Fisher was like, no, that won't do.
Right.
He wanted this whole thing at, what do they call it, not Hudson Yards.
That's Howard Terminal.
Yeah. It was going to be this 55-acre thing was going to have, like, mixed-use housing and real estate developments, and basically, like, the Bears are going to build it at Arlington Park. And the state wouldn't give them any money because the state of California won't fund these ballparks. Right across the bay, the Giants built their own. So that didn't work either. But they go from a much bigger potential site in Oakland to the 9-acre lot is basically the size of Fenway Park.
And which is quaint.
Yeah. But it's not the smallest. Do you know what of all the current Major League ballparks, you know which one takes up the least amount of acres? Just surprised me.
It's not U.S. Cellular, is it?
It's Target Field.
That makes sense.
8.5 acres. No, they tore down. They tore down some projects so that the White Sox could have a little elbow room.
Yeah, I remember.
And the seating capacity is only going to be 30,000. It'll be the smallest ballpark capacity wise. Do you know which one is currently the smallest? I guessed wrong.
PNC.
I thought it was Fenway. It's Cleveland. Progressive Field only seats 34,000. So a question I have for you that I didn't ask you before, so you're just going to have to guess, is famously the two places in America that are most affected by the current Major League Baseball blackout rules are the state of Iowa and Las Vegas, Nevada. Baseball fans in Las Vegas are currently blacked out. Well, they're blacked out for many reasons, but they're blacked out TV-wise from watching the Angels, the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, the A's, the Giants, and the Padres. When the A's move to town, will they lift the blackout so they can watch the A's? No, I'm wondering, if you have a Major League team then, and that becomes your, like, that's literally your market, do they lift the blackout on everybody else then?
I only have a guess.
Which is no, probably.
And I think it's yes.
Oh, it is yes. Okay.
Yes.
You would think, because right now, technically, they're saying, oh, no, no. All these other teams get to claim you as their market. But if your team is actually if you actually have one of those teams, it's hard for the other teams to claim Vegas as their hometown market.
You would think. There are lots of Dodgers fans in Las Vegas. That is kind of the most popular, not really surprisingly.
Yeah.
The most popular team there. So some people might like that. And it's a much smaller market than the Bay Area. The Bay Area is one of the biggest markets in baseball. I mean, the A's have sort of not tricked, but they've tried to portray themselves as a small market. And it's just not obviously the case. Now it is, but I'm not sure where Las Vegas is like 40th, something like that. I don't know. But
yeah, I think that's right. I remember from when the Raiders moved there. Everything in Oakland moves to. Well, everything in Oakland moves. The Raiders are in Vegas. The Warriors moved to San Francisco, and now the A's are leaving. Yeah, the big winners in all this are probably not even Vegas. It's the Giants.
I think that's one of the reasons that the Giants didn't. You know, they helped them out of town too. It's a little bit of a soft conspiracy here to make this happen between A's ownership and Manfred and the Giants, and the Giants. The A's wanted to move to San Jose at one time, I think. And the Giants wouldn't let that happen, getting back to territorial rights.
Right, and the Giants got those territorial rights when they were threatening to move to Tampa.
Hmm.
The A's basically agreed to let them have it if that meant they could, if it would help them make their case to build a new stadium. Oh, how times have changed. But I guess it's the same thing, right? The Giants, at that time, the Giants wanted the San Jose market because they wanted to stay in San Francisco. This time, the A's really didn't want the Giants to cede the San Jose market to them because they wanted to leave. So, in both cases, it was those two ownerships. They were completely different ownerships both times, kind of agreeing to do what was, you know, best for their rich buddy. So for the A's, this will be their, well, I guess technically their fourth home. Right? They were the Philadelphia A's. The Kansas City Oakland. I'm thinking of the Kings, the NBA team. They were never the Kansas City / Omaha A's. They were only the Kansas City A's. Oakland and now Vegas. Which I think will probably make it likely, or maybe not even likely, maybe just a guarantee, that they'll still be the A's when they go to Vegas. Like, they won't rebrand and leave the A's behind, because they've already been the A's in three other cities. Why wouldn't they just keep it? Plus, their uniforms are cool. So,
yeah, that's one of the more valuable things that they have, that identity.
What about the elephant? Does Stomper get to go?
I would imagine Stomper's from Philadelphia Times anyway.
I thought Stomper was a Charlie Finley creation. I thought he was the white elephant. Or maybe not. Maybe they already were affiliated with the elephant, and he just... I might have dreamt that. Well, they've had some owners. So it's too bad. I feel bad for the actual baseball fans in Oakland. People, I think, were mad today. Rob Manfred made some, you'll be shocked to know, some disingenuous comments about the support that the A's got from their fans over the years. And the reality is, he works for the owners.
Yeah.
He doesn't work for the fans. He works for the owners. If he's going to take a side, that's who he's going to side with.
Right.
So the A's do not have the worst record in the American League anymore.
They've been winning too many games.
Yes. That's the Royals have it.
They suck pretty bad.
Yes, they do. The A's are a red hot 19-52. That's a .268 winning percentage, and the Royals are 18-50, a .265 winning percentage. But meanwhile, over in the National League. The team with the worst record is the St. Louis Cardinals. Now that's a fan base I feel bad for.
I know, your heart bleeds.
Boo hoo hoo. Their expected win-loss record is 33-36, which is 6 games worse than their actual record.
They're spirited. They're winning some games that they shouldn't, if I understood you correctly.
No, they're losing games they should win. They're underperforming. They're underperforming. Okay, they're
entirely normal.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, at some point, somebody's head's got to roll. Now, I think it was right around the time I tried to get you to declare their season dead. And even with all this losing, and it's so much fun, they're still only 8.5 games out in the National League Central, which is... The National League Central is incapable of burying anyone.
Yeah.
But about that time, I saw that they were plus +450 to win the National League Central, and I thought, you know what, screw it. I'll throw some money on that, because if they lose, I will be more than happy to lose the money. And if they win, at least I'll win some money.
Yeah.
But man, I should have waited. Because I didn't know that we're going to be awful for another month.
What are those odds now? Do we know?
I don't know. I do know that the Cardinals haven't exactly, you know, they took off the last time they played the Cubs, and they did play the Cubs next weekend in London, so that ought to put a little pep back in their step. But that, of course, was when they famously had put Wilson Contreras in his timeout and wouldn't let him catch while he learned how to catch. And then a week later, they declared that he had learned how to catch and everything was going to be great. Well, he may have learned how to catch, although it doesn't look like it because the pitching is still terrible. But since he was reinstated as the catcher, this is Wilson Contreras' slash line. This is since May 15th. He's hitting 110 with a 223 on base and a 268 slugging. And the only thing he seems to have really hit was he destroyed one of the coolers in the dugout 2 days ago. So he's got that going for him, which is nice. Overall, he's now hitting 198. The Cardinals are last in the National League in hits allowed, 12th in runs, and 12th in walks allowed as a pitching staff. But I'm sure that's all because of the pitch selection. If it wasn't for that, they'd be in first place.
That's a real show.
And this has happened with Nolan Arenado actually hitting. He wasn't hitting for the first month and a half, and now he's pretty much back to normal, and they're still losing. But he had a puzzling quote after they suffered a gut-wrenching, although not for me. They had a two-run lead with two outs and two strikes in the ninth, and little Yaz hit a two-run homer and tied it. And then the Giants won it in 10 and finished off their sweep. And after the game, Arenado was asked about this rough patch they're in, and he's like, I don't think we can call it a rough patch. We've played bad baseball all year. And that wasn't the puzzling thing. Then he said, we got off to a similar start last year, but then we got Albert. And that really helped because we had such a young team. That young team had Yadier Molina, Adam Wainwright, Paul Goldschmidt, and Nolan Arenado on it. Plus Chaz Michael Michaelis and all the other guys.
Yeah.
So I don't know that counts, Nolan.
Yeah, it didn't. I know. Well, I think I know what he's saying because, like, Brendan Donovan and Nolan Gorman and a couple other people like that. But it's still, they did have some rookies. They had some youth in places, but you know, the median age or the average age still, I think, trends not young.
But. No, and I thought the idea that they needed Albert Pujols to come in and, like, sprinkle his veteran leadership all over a team that already had Yadier Molina. Although Yadi was, you know, Yadi had other – he was busy.
Right.
He had a basketball team basketball in Puerto Rico to tend to. But you would have thought some of the other guys might have been able to handle the leadership part.
I mean, let's be serious. The season Albert had last year kind of took everybody by surprise. It was I don't know that people were expecting, like, Miguel Cabrera, you know, half-asleep numbers, but I don't think anybody was thinking Albert was going to go out like that until it had already started. So. Right.
And he didn't even see and he started poorly for them. Yeah. About the time that baseball announced that him and Miggy were going to get picked for the All-Star team as kind of their farewell, although somebody forgot to tell Miguel he was supposed to retire after that. Albert was hitting terribly, and it was like, oh, this is going to be embarrassing. And then he went on a tear. And so he had pretty good stats by the All-Star game, and he finished up hitting 270, 345, 550. He had an 895 OPS. So honestly, this is how sad it is. They missed their then 42 with an asterisk, 42-year-old DH. They miss his actual output.
Might be like four asterisks.
Yeah. So yeah, back to what I was. I mean, I guess if they. When does Oliver actually get on the hot seat? If he's not already.
The thing that I wonder about is, are they entertaining the thought of switching out John Mozeliak? I mean, it would be an incredible undertaking to change that part of the team potentially. But, you know, if you look at their issues, you know, they went into the offseason. Everybody said they needed pitching, and they're like, no, we have six starting pitchers. You know, yeah. I think that's where at least half their problems are from. I mean, maybe a new manager can get them right mentally and get them on a hot streak. And like you said, the NL Central is not going to run away with itself. But, you know, the Cardinals need to push a little bit too. It's not, you know, it's not like it's all going to come down to them. They have to meet them at least halfway. And a manager probably would help that, but I think the Cardinals have to really fix what ails them, have bigger problems than that. But I don't know if Bill DeWitt is of a mind to move anybody in the front office. Yeah. So.
No, I mean, when you look at their starting rotation and the lowest ERA on it is Jordan Montgomery, 3.91, and he's 3-7.
Yeah, and he's been trending the wrong way.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, even if everything goes great, we're not talking about, you know, we got to face these Cardinal pitchers in the postseason series.
Right.
It's, you know, I guess if Wainwright gets some magic Pujols beans and.
Well, we know they've got them in a medicine cabinet in Busch Stadium 3 somewhere.
Yeah.
They fished them out last year. They can go do it again.
Right.
But Wainwright, he hurt himself in between the World Baseball Classic and the start of the season. He's made 7 starts. He's got a 5.79 ERA. And you're like, well, ERA. He's given up 53 hits in 37 innings.
That's too many.
Yeah. Steven Matz is 0-7 with a 5.49. He's given up 75 hits in 57 innings.
Steven Matz, you know, if all goes well, he's like replacement level, you know, or maybe a little better. Wainwright is 42 or something. He's too old to count on too much.
Yeah.
Yes, Miles Michaels is all right. Jordan.
He's 34. So.
Yeah.
I mean, they pushed their luck when they re-signed him. It's one of those. The most enjoyable thing is the very un-Cardinal way they've handled a lot of this stuff. Like, the old Cardinals would have basically declared victory at his first contract and let somebody else sign him.
Yes.
These guys were quick, just threw money at him. They have this, what they feel is a glut of outfielders. They can't find enough playing time for all of them. And the old Cardinals would have picked one or two of them they thought were, you know, the potential least productive, and they would have traded them for pitching.
Right.
And they didn't do any of it. They kept them all. And now they're just left with a big mess, which is very enjoyable for me. And I guess they keep waiting for Jack Flaherty's shoulder to magically heal itself. But, you know, he used to be really good. And he's only 27. But it's not there anymore. So you're right. I mean, they could change the manager out of, because that just, you know, that's the, I guess if they're doing very non-Cardinal things these days, that's what you do, right? It's not the manager's fault, but somebody, you got to show the fans you're doing something.
Right.
So you fire the manager. You call Yachty. And you're like, hey, you want to come? He's like, I don't know. We got basketball practice.
I don't know. We're shooting free throws right now.
Can I just Zoom manage the team from Puerto Rico? Sure. Because, I mean, I've always felt that eventually that's he's going to be their manager. You know, he managed the Puerto Rico team in the World Baseball Classic. He got asked if he wants to manage someday. He said yes. But I don't think he wants to do it now.
Not with the NBA draft coming
that's
up.
That's right. Maybe they could maybe they get Albert to just... Albert, can you manage for a couple of years, and then you can give it to Yachty? Because we need your veteran.
They'd have to trade something to the Angels to get Albert out of his personal services contract, though.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I bet they... doesn't he have a phony baloney job on the MLB Network now?
He just got... he's a special assistant to A's mover Rob Manfred as well.
Oh. Well, he's a strong guy. Maybe that's his job. He's supposed to pack boxes and get the A's ready. Albert, you look like you could lift a fair amount of weight. Can we send you to Oakland, start packing up equipment? Yeah, the other not very uncardinal thing they did was, did anybody think that the Wilson thing was going to work? I don't think anybody thought it was going to be this bad this fast. But, I didn't.
Well, the common vibe was Yachty's ghost or whatever was going to make it difficult for him to even appear to be succeeding. And I thought it would go better than this, too.
Right. The way I looked at it was, Wilson, I don't know if you know this about him, he's a little bit emotional.
Right.
And there would be extra pressure on him, plus the fact that all the things Yachty did well, Wilson didn't do, which I think might have been the appeal to the Cardinals, which was, we'll finally get some offense out of catcher.
Right.
But you knew that the stuff he didn't do well was going to be a much bigger deal in St. Louis than it would be anywhere else. And it has been.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, kind of like no matter how big of a deal it should be, in addition to... It does seem like they've kind of forgotten how to play baseball, and Yachty took that with him to basketball practice.
Well, it's and they can be so hard headed about shit too. Like, they've got this veteran pitching staff. It's not great, but it's a veteran pitching staff, and they will not let the pitchers have the pitch count and call pitches. They said just said, well, no, we don't do that. And it's like, well, that might help. You don't want to do something that would help. The Cubs can be a little slow. They're not stubborn as much as they are dumb. But two starts ago, Kyle Hendricks had Miguel Amaya, the rookie sensation, catching him.
Yeah.
And they were in San Diego, and Kyle had at least three, maybe four pitch clock violations, which doesn't seem like a Kyle Hendricks thing because he moves so quick. He works quickly. But it was just communication problems with him and Miguel. So the next start, they gave the pitch count to Kyle and had Miguel catch him again, and he almost threw a no-hitter. I don't think that's the reason he almost threw a no-hitter, but it was the reason that everything went, Kyle got in a rhythm and he could stay in it. He didn't have to shake the rookie off three times to get to the pitch he wanted to throw.
Right.
So if even the Cubs are smart enough to do that, it's very interesting. Of course, we talked about it back when they first did the weird thing where they made a huge example out of Wilson and said he wasn't going to be catching anymore. And they basically intimated that, their pitching infrastructure is so much more complicated than anybody else's because it's so advanced that it's going to make it hard. It's like, usually when shit is that complicated, it's because whoever designed it isn't smart enough to simplify it. The worst teachers in the world are the ones who can't explain a complicated can't explain anything that's complicated because they don't know how to distill it down to its parts and explain it to people, and that's exactly what it felt like with the Cardinals. So But I say all this fearing that that they don't have to get that good to contend again, because the division is not that good.
Right.
You know, you're like, well, you're 15 games under on June 16th. You're probably screwed. Well, you're really not. Not in the Central. But there's only one path for them, I think, to the playoffs now, and that's to win the Central. I don't think... If the Cardinals end up with a decent record, I don't think it's going to be enough to get them into the wild card race, but it might get them into the division race. Oh, I forgot. I was going to wish a 50th anniversary to a Chicago icon. Do you know, or 50th birthday? Do you know whose 50th birthday it is today?
I'm not sure. No.
The Sears Tower.
Oh.
Yes. Not the Willis Tower. The Sears Tower.
No, we don't call it that. Not in this house.
No. It's mama named in the Sears Tower. I'm gonna call him the Sears Tower. speaking of old monoliths. Did you see John Sterling get hit in the head with a foul ball the other day?
I did. It was bloody.
It caused me to, in the newsletter, to wax poetic about John Sterling and Susan Waldman's broadcasts.
Yeah.
When I first got XM, and you could listen to any, you know, Major League Baseball broadcast, I started to listen to this absurd thing coming out of New York with John Sterling and his incessant Broadway musical references and his sidekick, former Broadway showgirl Susan Waldman. And especially, it just seemed like when I was out doing stuff on Saturdays, the Yankees, unless they're unless Fox grabs the game, the Yankees always play home 1 o'clock, so noon my time, games. And so it typically would be the first game of the day. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be like, oh, the Yankees are on. And I would listen to them, and I would think, God, it must suck to be a Yankee fan. I have to listen to these two call all your games. And then a funny thing happened. I got so I like them.
Yeah.
Now, I'm glad they're not, you know, I'm not a Yankee fan. It might drive me nuts if I was, but as a neutral observer, I actually find it all kind of charming now.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought I would do that. Sterling is actually, he's actually a good play-by-play announcer. Except for the fact that his eyesight isn't what it used to be. And because he has these theatrical 30-second home run calls to get into, he'll get started. And then Susan will have to tell him that the ball hit the wall and the outfielder's throwing it back in, and he needs to stop the his calls.
Right.
And so I wrote about this, and somebody wrote in the comments, wasn't Susan the one who went nuts for something with Roger Clemens? And I knew exactly what he meant. So back before, when she used to be like the like their sideline reporter.
Right.
And whatever year it was, Roger Clemens was threatening to come out of retirement and pitch, and the Yankees were trying to sign him. And I think this actually happened on Yes. I think it happened on TV. I think I was watching it. This is before she became the full-time radio announcer. So Susan, they go to Susan, and she is screaming into the microphone. And she's like, oh, my God! She's like, Roger Clemens is standing at George Steinbrenner's box. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And I just, it cracked me up when she did it. And I mean, if you're in the car with me and I flip around and I land on a Yankees game and they're on, no matter what happens, I will break into some, like, say Anthony Rizzo pops out to second base. That'll just be, oh my God, Anthony Rizzo just popped out to second base. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It entertains no one but me. But still, I enjoy it.
That's pretty good. I like it.
My Susan Waldman impression?
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
She does a lot of research for every game. And she's kind of the Taylor McGregor of the Yankees, where she's got a lot of facts and she's going to cram them all into the game, whether you want them or not. But the best thing that's ever happened during Yankee games are she'll either find some weird stat or something strange will happen on the field and she'll talk about it. And John will just go, well, you know, Susan, that's baseball. And he must say they must do that like four times a game.
But, right.
So if you didn't see the clip, Sterling was, they have a, the fan puts a camera on John for the entire game. And they like to put out clips of him like going nuts when there's a home run, or he goes into this ridiculous, you know, Yankees win, the Yankees win, the Yankees win. And they like to show that, but because they had the camera on him, you actually got to see it, which wouldn't happen with most radio broadcasts. Like if Zach Zaidman took one off the forehead, as much as we might like to see it, there's not going to be a video of it. You see John, it's just kind of a routine foul pop behind home plate, and he looks up and he's announcing and he looks down, and apparently what happened is in that booth, the ball gets to a certain height, you can't see it anymore. But typically, right, when it gets to that height, it's going over you. So he saw it go, and he's like, well, that's not coming back this way. And he looks down, and it luckily for him, it bounces off like the counter in front of him, and it hits him right in the forehead. It didn't hit him on the fly, but it hit him on the forehead. And he just does this, ow, ow, ow. But I thought the most amazing thing was he didn't just, like, start swearing, which is exactly what I would have done. There would have been a parade of F-bombs, and I don't know that they have the, you know, the six-second delay during Yankee broadcasts. But he didn't. It hit him in the glasses. I don't know if it broke his glasses or not, but he didn't leave the booth. He stayed, and he finished the game, and you see him doing his the Yankees win thing at the end, and he doesn't have his glasses on. I can't imagine what he could actually see, but he somehow finished the game. My favorite John Sterling story ever was when Charlie Steiner was there, they would alternate. You know, they would do some kind of, you know, like one of them would do the first three, one of them would do the middle three, and then one of them would do the last three.
Right.
And the way they did it in the playoffs, this was 2003, was they had a deal. If it went to extra innings, they would alternate. So very famously, the Aaron Boone home run happened, I believe, in the 11th inning. And it was a Charlie Steiner inning. So right. Charlie has the call. But the way Charlie tells it, you know, because it kind of came out of nowhere, right? Tim Wakefield was in and, you know, knuckleballing his little butt off, and they didn't know how many innings this was going to go. And then all of a sudden, Boone hits the home run. And Charlie says, I'm just calling it, and I can hear the door to the booth open behind me. And I can feel, like, this rush. And it was Sterling literally running to the microphone to try to get in on the call while Charlie's calling it. And he's like, I'm calling it, and I'm like trying to forearm my, you know, the other broadcaster away from the microphone for my moment of glory. So that's my John Sterling stuff, which I'm sure the regular listeners are like, this is great. Please talk about the Yankees radio announcer some more. That's great.
He's a treasure. It's all right. They don't like it too bad.
Yeah. He's 84.
Right.
He doesn't do every game anymore, but he still does most of them. He does more games than Jim DeShays does on Marquee for the Cubs. Yeah, it's been an issue for Cubs fans. When they go out on the West Coast, we get a heavy dose of Rick Sutcliffe. And a heavy dose of Rick is too much. He's you know, he's a beloved Cub, and you like to hear him for about three innings, and then you want him to go away. But he's going to be there for four more games. So you're kind of stuck with it. They're... the giveaway this, the Orioles are coming in over the weekend. So the Cubs, who just swept the Pirates and are inching their way back into contention, are now going to find out that the Orioles are a little bit better than the Pirates, I think. But the giveaway at the Saturday game is a Boog and JD bobblehead, the talking bobblehead. And I thought, well, does the bobblehead come and you get the bobblehead, but then you have to, like, every few days you have to swap out the JD one and you have to put Rick Sutcliffe in there or Ryan Dempster. Or then you have to occasionally put Joe Girardi on Jim's lap and turn into a three-man bobblehead. I just don't know. I don't know how the rotation goes.
That would be great if we could swap them out, though.
They should do that. And this is clearly not as big a deal. I don't know if you saw this, but so the Cubs this year, one of the giveaways at Cub games is bobblehead replicas of the statues that they have. The creepy Harry Carey statue that I just hate. Can we tear that down and get a nice statue for Harry? And then the player statues for Ernie Banks, Billy Williams, Ron Santo, and Fergie Jenkins. And they did the Billy Williams bobblehead giveaway a couple of weeks ago. And fans immediately got them and took little Billy out of his box. And, one of the things that a prerequisite for getting your statue is the Cubs have to retire your number. They famously retired 26 for Billy. Well, apparently because they retired at the bobblehead makers, like, oh, it's not available, so we'll just make him number one. Put the wrong number on the Billy Williams bobblehead. And they now are pledging to replace those. So they're going to make 10,000 more, and then they're going to somehow get them to all the people that have the wrong one.
Right.
And they won't be ready till next year. Much like the Cubs.
Because of the COVID supply chain issues?
Yeah. Probably because the bobblehead maker's like, what? Well, tough shit. You guys signed off on it. You didn't know what number he was? Yeah, we'll get to it when we get to it.
You'd think there'd be a quality control.
Yeah, you would have thought somebody in the Cub front office would have looked at one of the bobbleheads and went, oh shit, that's the wrong number.
But I think this is a Crane project.
Yeah, that's Crane's probably the one who actually. On the John Orand and Andrew Marchand podcast, they do a who's up and who's down every week. And Crane got a who's down for that, which I enjoyed very much.
Oh, wow.
They're like, oh, it's some guy named Crane Kenny, who's the president of business operations for the Cubs. Like, oh, yes, thank you. Oh, but I was going to say, so that mistake, the Boog and JD bobblehead is them sitting at the broadcast, you know, table, and they're on the wrong sides. Like, Boog always sits, when you're looking at it on TV, Boog always sits on the right, Jim and whoever the color analysts are on the left, and it's reversed on the bobblehead, which is not a big deal, but it was like, how do you get that wrong? I don't get it.
Well, if you're going to get Billy Williams' number wrong, I mean.
That's right. I think it would be funny if they get the bobblehead and they hit the thing and it's Len Casper and Bob Brenly's voices. Like, well, that's the recording you sent us. Like, oops. There's a big first place showdown this weekend in the NL Central. The Pirates and Brewers. The Brewers are fresh off being swept at home by the A's and then losing two games to the Twins. And the Pirates just got swept by the Cubs. That seems pretty fitting. But the last thing I want to talk to you about was. There's actually one now that the Cubs have won three in a row, so they're playing for them relatively well. But there is a team in the division that's playing well, and it's the Cincinnati Reds.
The Red Legs.
Do we think the Reds are any good?
It's a short answer, yes. Long answer, you know, I really like how their lineup is coming together. I'm not sure if they have enough consistent pitching depth to get where they want to go. But, you know, they've added a rookie named Eli De La Cruz, who to me looks like, you know, somebody on Twitter asked, well, how excited should I get about Eli De La Cruz? He's a switch hitter. He's 6'5", got a big, strong chest. He's very, that was a Mike Murphy reference from the score. He's sort of built like a basketball player. Very fast, like ridiculously fast. Big power, a good base runner, smart player, enthusiastic player. People are, well, how excited should I, you know, is this Griffey excited? Is it A-Rod excited? I know it's hard to think anybody get excited about A-Rod, but at one time, you know, he's 21, so he looks terrific. They have a bunch of other rookies or near rookies in the lineup who are good. Spencer Steer has been really good at the third base and on all over the field. And Matt McClain, they brought up a rookie at shortstop who's keeps hitting, and they look great. I mean, you know, that's another team too. Ownership didn't really spend any money on free agency. If it had spent a couple of bucks on a pitcher or two, I would say I would bet on the Reds, but they didn't. And, you know, they've got Hunter Green, but, you know, he's limited, and I'm not sure if their pitching is going to be anything more than mediocre, and then that's what would keep them down. But offensively, the kids look great. So they're a lot of fun. They take extra bases, and sometimes to their detriment, but, you know, they make the other team make a good play to beat them, and that's always a fun team to watch, that fun kind of team to watch. And maybe they'll get Joey Votto back in the second half. I mean, his rehab is taking forever. But he's an old man, so, you know, I don't know if his swing is ever going to be what it once was, but if it is, that'd be another shot in the arm for the offense. So there's a lot to like about the Reds. There'll be a big pain in the butt. I don't know if I like them to win the division.
Yeah. They have three pitchers who've made at least 10 starts. Hunter Green, Graham Ashcraft, who's on the injured list right now, and Luke Weaver.
Right.
Hunter is 1-4, Graham is 3-5, and Luke is 1-2.
Yeah, right. They're not really staying in the games.
It's 36 starts, and they have five. Their top three starters have 5 wins.
Right.
But they are 34-35, which in the Central, they're only a game. They're actually, they would have picked up a little ground. They're probably a game out now. A game under and a game out, just the way God intended it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny. So Eli De La Cruz reminds me of his brother O'Neill.
Yes. Well, they are buds.
That's what I was gonna say. It turns out that they are really good friends.
You know, O'Neill Cruz, 6'7", even taller, a little bit older. So I wasn't sure if they were – I know they're both from the Dominican, but O'Neill's, I think, 25 or thereabouts, 20, something like that. Maybe not that old, but he's at least a couple years older than Ellie. And he's the first guy he called, Ellie, when he got promoted. So the big, tall Dominican shortstops apparently all hang out.
Yeah.
So that was funny. And I didn't really get a chance to – people probably won't like this, but Ellie's like, and when I was a kid, I really liked Derek Jeter. That kind of brought the room down a little bit, but, you know, he's the captain, man. All right. Whatever, dude. Don't buy into the Derek Jeter cult. No, I'm kidding. But, and he's a pretty good, like his best position is shortstop, but they got him playing third because Matt McClain has been doing fine at short. And, he's got a great arm, so he's going to throw 100 miles an hour like Dunstan across the infield, and really fun to watch run the bases. You can't say that about a lot of people. So He's he checks a lot of boxes. He's going to be very popular, dude. He's there's not going to be too many people who won't like Ellie De La Cruz.
Yeah. So Matt McClain, who is not 6 foot five, he's 5 foot eight.
5'8" listed. Yeah.
He did not. I think this is right. He kind of fell off the prospect map last year because he did not have a good year. He, I'm trying to frantically pull this up while I talk out of my ass, but
yeah, he did. I think he only hit about 240. I think I was just looking at his stats. He
He hit 232 in Chattanooga, double A last year. After hitting well, he was kind of fresh out of UCLA. He got drafted in 21. But he hit well in 21 at his two stops, and then last year got Chattanooga's for a full year, and it was bad. 232. He did get on base, 363, 453. I can't talk. But so far in his limited time in the big leagues, 328, 379, 516. So.
Yeah, he's a redheaded Catholic boy from. Tustin, California, one of the places they want to put the Angels maybe someday. Really liked Mike Trout as a kid. He grew up an Angels fan, the poor lad, after they had won the World Series, so not too much to cheer about. But he's got a motor, so you know he's not as athletic as Ellie, so there aren't as many things as he can do there. But a really nice player and a hot hitter. And somebody who, you know, when he's understanding what's going on, is maybe someone who'll draw some walks. He's like, you know, I've been a little bit overmatched sometimes with on fastballs, and so I'm striking out more than I want to. But his ideal is to, walk 50 times a year and strike out 50 times a year. I'm not sure if he'll be able to do that in the majors, but when he was in AAA, he had numbers that were kind of on the way to that, so... before they brought him up in May.
And they've got...
Steer was a really nice pickup they got from...
the Twins, right?
From the Twins last year. In the mail, in the Molly.
Yeah.
In the melee. In the melee. That pitcher who's hurt. So, for the Twins.
Yeah, because Steer's been playing first, filling in for Votto. But he's not really a first baseman.
No, he's more of a third baseman, and they put him in the outfield, too.
Yeah. So, if anything, they're going to have to sort out how they went. They've got – I think what they would really like to do, if they think Ellie can stick at shortstop, I think they'd like him to play shortstop, McClain to play second, and Jonathan India to go to maybe the outfield.
Yeah, or third base.
But I think what says is for a team, and they do have, they've got young pitchers with talent, like Hunter Green, because nobody has more talent than Hunter Green, and Ashcraft, and
Nick Lodolo's really good too, but he's got an injury that's going to keep him out for a while.
Yeah, he's on the 60-day injury list.
They just brought up Andrew Abbott, maybe two or three starts. And, he's not – he doesn't have great, great stuff like Hunter Green, but maybe is a little more polished, and he's left-handed, and he can throw just hard enough that it's a problem.
Yeah.
So he's not – I'm not sure who to compare him to. For some reason, Chuck Finley is coming to mind, which is very strange. But, he's not Aroldis Chapman fireballing 100 miles an hour, but – he's a left-hander who can get the ball over the plate, and those guys are pretty valuable.
Yeah. He's made two starts in the big league so far. He's won them both and has yet to give up a run. So that seems like a pretty good start. And he's got a creepy little red mustache.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He kind of looks like Ron Howard or...
Yeah, that's not a good look.
No.
But the little log jam here of guys who can play second, third, and first or the outfield should mean... that at some point, you trade one of them and get a pitcher. You just have to make sure you pick the right one. But I enjoyed this. For Reds fans who are all excited, you know, they're excited, right? They've got all this good young talent in the team. Even if they're not going to, you know, seriously contend this year, they're still, you know, they're playing exciting games and they're having fun. Gordon Whitmire's coming to town now to put an end to all that fun. So, I don't know. I don't know if he's writing for the Inquirer or what he's who he's going to work.
Yeah,
for
that's
there.
Right.
But
that's right.
He's a regular Dean Wormer. No more fun of any kind for Reds fans. I can tell you why all this stuff actually secretly sucks. So we have that to look forward to, which is nice. I think for Cub fans, when we look at the Pirates with, like, you know, O'Neill Cruz and some of the guys they've called up, and they've got more guys coming. They've got, like, two of the top catchers in minor league baseball. You see those guys come up, and then the Cubs bring up, hey, look, it's Matt Mervis.
I thought Matt would be better. Maybe he will be.
Yeah, I'd like to think. So they sent Matt down, and they brought Cody Bellinger back from the injured list because Cody can't run yet. So he's going to play first base for a while. And what I'm hoping the plan is that once Cody can go back to the outfield, that they bring Mervis back. Because he'll go back to just destroying AAA again.
Right.
That's not where he needs to be to get better now.
Right. There's no challenge there. Right. No room for growth.
Right. I mean, you go down there and you've got the automated strike zone, so everybody's walking now. And pitchers are throwing 89 miles an hour, because if they could throw 95, they wouldn't be in AAA. They'd be in a bullpen in the big leagues.
Right.
And he's just going to, you know. I mean, everybody hits in AAA except for David Bodie. Hell, they sent Madrigal down there for 11 days. He had 488.
Right.
And he came back and he's, you know, he's still in the 230s. But I'm hoping that's...
You think Cody is fixing to be traded? Is there enough time to ramp that up and to make it worth it? Will it be far enough out? You know, what will they want to do if right. they're kind of hanging around?
That's kind of the fear, right? Is that the Cubs will be in this, caught in this no man's land where they're not really in it, but they won't want to admit that they're not really in it because right. they've sold the last 2 years. And they've got two pieces that they don't have plans for after this year. I mean, Cody has a player option for next year, which he's not going to exercise. Unless, if he re-injures the knee, then congratulations, you're going to get him again next year. But if he doesn't, you're not. And then they have Marcus Stroman, who has a player option, and who basically keeps begging, and he goes on social media and begs the Cubs to negotiate with him, and they won't do it.
Please engage me.
Yes. And, so those are two guys that would be really valuable trade pieces at the deadline, assuming Cody is still upright and that Marcus hasn't hurt himself by then. And they are also two guys that, well, no, I guess they could give Cody a qualifying offer. He could turn down his option. They could give him a qualifying offer. So they get a draft pick for him. Oh, boy. Stroman, because he took the qualifying offer with the Mets after the COVID year, they just lose him. They don't get anything for him. So, but I could see the Cubs being like four games out of the division and seven games out of the last wild card spot, and little Jed being like, oh, let's just see what happens. And that doesn't do you any good going forward then.
Yeah.
So that could be an issue.
Be a little more proactive. They should, I mean, you know, it's not my money, but they went long enough without being big spenders that I don't think it would kill them to roll the dice, if you call it that, on a long-term contract for Stroman for sure, and maybe even for Bellinger. Yeah. I mean, give the team something to grow around.
But. So Stroman signed a 2-year deal with an option minutes before the lockout. He literally had to fly to Chicago and get his physical in before the lockout started. And he basically was doing that to assure himself, regardless of what the financial future looked like, he'd know how much money he was going to make. So he'd make $50 million. It seemed like a pretty good deal. That deal made a lot of sense to me for him. It didn't make any sense for me for the Cubs for it to only be 2 years. It was going to be 2 years. You knew you weren't going to be any damn good. I could see signing Marcus Stroman for 4 years. I didn't see two. So now it's 2 years later. And I think Marcus is going to want at least 4 years. Because Jameson Taillon is the same age, and he got 4 years from the Cubs. And he's not going to want Jameson Taillon money. He's going to want Marcus Stroman money. So he's going to want, basically, I think the minimum you could sign him for would be 4 years at $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the Cubs. You should not, that shouldn't bother you at all.
No.
You know, what's a qualifying offer going to be next year? It's like $19.5 million this year. It's going to be probably over $20 million. You're only paying him a little bit more than you would have to pay, you know, like the theoretical, like, it's not the average free agent,
right,
but that kind of sets the bar. Any good player is going to make more than the qualifying offer. You're not going to get a good pitcher for less than $20 million. And here's a guy who actually wants to play for you. And I also think there's some value in, I think the Cubs need to prove to players that they'll actually re-sign their players, because they didn't do it with any of those guys. I mean, yeah, they gave a token. The Nico Hoerner extension is hilarious to me. They bought 1 year of free agency from him. And then they gave Ian Happ 3 years because he would take it. So they didn't have to go long-term with him because he was happy to take 3 years. But the other players look around and see that, you know, you had all those guys from your World Series team, and you didn't sign any of them. And they'll tell you, well, you know, we set our market value. None of those guys got as much money on the open market as we offered them, so they should have taken it. It's like, well, that's great. That's like bidding, putting an offer in on a house for $400,000, and it gets turned down, and then 2 weeks later, you see that family ended up selling a house for $390,000. And you're like, see, our offer was better. And you're still living in your car.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, okay, you didn't re-sign any of those guys. And I look, and you don't have a first baseman. And you don't have a third baseman. And you had to pay the new shortstop more than the old shortstop was going to agree to before COVID. And I'm just some dopey fan. I mean, if I'm an actual player agent, and I'm looking at the way the Cubs do business, and I'm explaining things to my client, they're not real high on the list right now, at least
it's
for
not
long-term
be a
homes for these players. So you're going to kind of, you think at some point you need to prove it. The other thing is, if you look at their starting rotation, they're going to lose Stroman, they're going to lose Drew Smyly. Kyle Hendricks has an option for next year, which I don't know if you're going to pick up. Justin Steele has the dreaded forearm tendonitis. He's been playing catch every 5 days, but hasn't actually got on a mound to pitch. You might very well need to find four starting pitchers next year.
Yeah.
One of those wouldn't be Marcus Stroman. You couldn't just sign him right now. So I don't get it. And it's not just that they haven't re-signed him; they won't negotiate with him.
Yeah, they're almost afraid to try and answer the question.
Yeah, it's almost like, oh, he's gonna ask for a reasonable amount, and then what are we gonna do? Well, you could say yes. How about that? But the whole thing, they're basically like, we can't afford him. Well, what does he want? We don't know. Well, then how do you know you can't afford him? So I don't understand any of that. The Bellinger thing never made any sense to me because they only signed him for 1 year.
Right.
And the whole logic behind it was, you know, we've got his two old Dodger hitting coaches on staff now, and they've identified some things he can work on, and he'll be healthier, which is the biggest thing, I think. He's a year farther away from his injuries. And we'll turn him around, and then he can go somewhere else.
<It's> like, right.
What was the purpose of that, then?
Right.
And I heard there were people like, well, he wouldn't have signed more than a one-year deal because Scott Boras wouldn't let him. Like, well, that's fine. The Cubs shouldn't have signed him, because I don't know what good it does you long-term to have one good year out of Cody Bellinger, unless your plan was you get to the trade deadline and you trade him for something. But that doesn't seem like a really good use of the $17.5 million that you're paying him, is to get him to August 1st and then get two prospects from the Braves. So, but what do I know?
You know some good John Sterling stories.
I do. Well, you know, David, that's baseball.
That's right. George's box.
Marcus Stroman is in Tom Ricketts' box. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, David.
Yep. Thank you, Andy.
Many of us have herpes.